Today is the final day of April. Spoiler alert, that means we're a third of the way through the year already. But it also means we've reached the final day of Autism Awareness Month. So I'm really glad we have found a gap to squeeze in this interview, this next conversation. And the guest in studio is a familiar face and voice and name to all of us because she's one of our colleagues from the PR industry that we often interact with in terms of setting up interviews with other people. Today, though, it's her turn to sit in the hot seat and talk to us because Tokozo Galako recently wrote a really interesting piece about the challenges that she faces mothering a child with autism while holding down a full-time, very demanding corporate job and also dealing with, shall we say, cultural insensitivities or lack of awareness, which sometimes adds to the pressures that she deals with. And I'm really, firstly, I want to say thank you for writing that piece. It's so honest and heartfelt and vulnerable in ways, but I think it's such an important act of reaching out to other parents who are in this space. So thank you for writing it and thank you for coming on here to share it with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm so happy that I did that. You know, when I actually wrote this piece, I wanted to maybe inspire someone who might have been, you know, looking for answers, you know, dealing with their child being on the spectrum, or just simply just, you know, just letting parents know that it's not easy, but you can get through this.
Like, yeah.
There is some positivity here.
So let's start by talking about your son, Solly. I think he's 12 years old now. Is that correct?
He's turning 13 next month.
Okay.
Yes. So Solly, my beautiful square peg, he is turning 13 and he was diagnosed with autism at the age of 2.
Okay.
We picked this up when we took him to daycare. And, you know, I was very fortunate because the lady who was running that daycare knew about autism.
Okay.
So she was like, listen, I'm seeing like a few red flags here. Let's just go and see a few people. Here are recommendations. And I was open-minded. I had never heard of what autism is. So I was like, okay, let's go. Let me see what's going to happen here. Let me go through this process. And I got a diagnosis a year later, like a formal diagnosis a year later.
So he would have been roughly three years old then.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Firstly, I mean, how lucky are you to have been in that particular daycare with someone who knew what to watch for, who knew how to respond, who would have been comfortable with the concept and not sort of afraid of what you were dealing with? Because a lot of people have a lot of fear around the diagnosis of autism because they simply know so little about it. Mm. Unless you've had a direct experience within your immediate family.
Yeah.
It's something you might not understand, and it presents in so many different ways and so many different forms that there is no sort of one box fits all diagnosis either, which is why I know it can take a long time to get to diagnosis. I mean, when you heard that formal diagnosis, what were the immediate thoughts that went through your mind? What were the immediate fears that you faced? What did you think that day?
Yeah, can I tell you, I think the first thing for me was I just wanted to, first of all, I have never heard of autism. And I think the first thing that I wanted to know what it is so that I can help my child. Mm-hmm. I think the focus at that particular point, I just wanted to know, is my child okay, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then I quickly, I never had a moment of denial. I don't know if it's because I was a mother who was 20 years old at the time. So I was very open-minded to things. So I was ready to jump and ask questions. What can I do? How can I make this work? And really the professionals that were with me at that time were so understanding and they were so gentle with me, just giving me tips and where I can go. And I was open. I think the first thing for me was just being willing to learn about this new diagnosis and trying whatever they have presented in front of me.
You're very lucky to have had access to that kind of help. Not everybody does, and not everybody has enough understanding to know what sort of help can be reached out for, which is, again, why I think the piece that you wrote is so helpful. One of the things that really struck me was your description of the language challenges you faced. So you were lucky enough to have access to the help of a speech therapist. But it was a speech therapist whose first language and whose language of therapy was English, whereas Solly's first language is Xhosa.
Yeah.
And I was really intrigued reading what you said about that extra layer of difficulty, that you have a child here who is already having difficulties with language, must now try and process those difficulties in a language that isn't his mother tongue. Tell us a little bit more about what a challenge that was for you.
Yo, what a challenge. I think I was a little bit fortunate in a sense that it didn't happen immediately, like in my immediate community. So I was in Durban, which is a little bit of a city and not in my immediate community. Right. However, it was a bit challenging now when I have to go home for the holidays and now my child has to interact in isiXhosa and no, you know, most people are not speaking English. And for him now, it's a little bit difficult to make friends because he doesn't actually understand the language. So I felt a little bit stressed. I felt like I needed to explain most of the time that, oh no, it's not because he doesn't want to learn Xhosa, it's because we're going through this process. That took a while for me to accept. But I think after some time, I was like, you know what? It's okay. Let me let my child learn this. Once he's figured out his words, then we'll see. And I mean, right now, Solly can speak isiXhosa, he can speak isiZulu, and he can speak English.
That's amazing.
You know, yeah. So all I had to do was just be patient and just let him learn, because the way he learns is not the same way that I'm learning. So it might take a little bit longer for him to get it, but eventually he did. And now he just, you know, he's able to make friends and he can read the room and speak isiXhosa when he sees that grandma is a little bit upset, you know. So that's how I, you know, managed to get through that, that challenge.
Xhosa, what about, I mean, you write in the piece about cultural sensitivities, the language being one issue, then you had to say it's not that he is rejecting isiXhosa or doesn't want to master it, but we are going through a process of helping this child grasp language as a concept, full stop, baby steps, one step at a time. Where else did the issue of cultural sensitivity come into your experience? Were there any other moments that you really had to almost be somebody who stopped and said, no, you're misreading this situation?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many, but just thinking at the top of my head, like, for instance, children behave in a different, or I expected to behave in a different way, like at family gatherings and all those kinds of environments. And my child is one person who, if let's say everyone is quiet, he'll want to stand up and say, hi, everyone, you know. So, you know, just being judged because maybe it looks like I'm not disciplining my child the right way, because he's not behaving how he should, how a child his age should behave, or he should read the room that now it's time to keep quiet, and you know. Yeah. So I think there I really felt judged that I'm not disciplining my child enough. My child is way too naughty. He doesn't sit still, you know, things like that. And again, I've had to find myself explaining and explaining and explaining. But I think I've reached a point where I'm like, Solly and Ntokozo, if you invite us, we are the autism bunch and anything can happen at any time. And that's how I want my child to be understood, that he is the way he is. He means no harm, but people need to start understanding that, accept him for who he is, you know, just accept him for who he is and work around him. Because if someone comes into the studio, for instance, and they're saying they're sick, you have a way of accommodating that person. I'm just making an example, you know. So why can we not see children who are different and accept their way of you know, interacting?
Absolutely. Just for anybody who's come in halfway through this conversation, you are listening to guest Ntokozo Kalako, who is with us in studio, talking to me about a piece that she wrote recently about her experience mothering her son Solly, who is almost 13 years old. Those few extra months count a lot at this age, I know. He's almost 13. He's on the autism spectrum. And she's written this incredibly powerful piece about what you've just said, the need for awareness, the need for accommodation, for being willing to say that we do not all have to fit into the same box and that there are ways to make everybody feel welcome in the room. It's something we felt quite powerfully at Comic-Con yesterday, funnily enough. And while I was there, I was just saying to Ntokozo on the break, we walked into a certain section at Comic-Con and I commented to the organizer, hey, the music is off here. It's suddenly quiet. And they said, no, this is the chill zone. We know that a lot of people coming to this event might be on the spectrum, so we've made a space where they can get away from the overpowering noise and stimulation, etc. And I thought, wow, what an amazing thing to do at a big mass event, to have the foresight to create a space like that. I mean, gestures like that are more than just a gesture. It's not just a tick box exercise. Something like that can really make or break your outing with your son on a day like that. Not so.
Absolutely, 100%. And as a result, Pippa, I actually try to avoid malls because I feel like my child actually gets so overwhelmed with the sounds, the lights, everything. And he just needs that space where he can just regroup. So I was really moved by that, like what you said at Comic-Con. And I think it's also something that, you know, just as a society and people that are in the building industry or, you know, in spaces like that, that those are the things that we need to bring into the conversation, because every person I speak to about autism, they either know someone who has autism or they themselves have someone in their family that has autism. So it's no longer a select few that are experiencing autism. So I really think there definitely needs to be a conversation about inclusivity in those kinds of spaces.
Now, the other thing that your piece hit home so hard for me was the juggling act. And it's partly because I read it and I'm like, yep, been there, done that, had that experience as well. The juggling act of motherhood and work. It's enough of a balancing juggling act. It can be tumultuous and chaotic, even on the easiest of parenting circumstances. To add to that, a child who does have extra needs like yours, because I know I just struggle to manage, leave the show, rush to do the school run, get the kids to extramurals, make sure there's food in the fridge for tonight. You've got to add on to that extra therapy sessions, a lot more sort of medical-related appointments that might take you away from the office. And you're very lucky if you've got an incredibly accommodating boss who gets that and understands that and makes spaces for that.
Yeah.
But they are quite few and far between. Talk to us a little bit about that particular aspect of the challenge that you face.
Yeah, you know, today is actually an example of what it is. Like, you know, I'm trying to be the super PR mom, and then I want to be a mom as well, but I also want to do things that make me happy as well. And coming to work, I think, first of all, shout out to my boss and my king, who is so kind and accommodating to things that I go through as an autism mom. Like, I think a few weeks back, we were sitting down in a meeting and I had a call. My son had a situation where he wasn't feeling well. So I had to literally drop everything right at that moment and rush to the school, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, things like that. And then I used to laugh at my other colleague, Claire. She usually has a diary of everything in her calendar. And that's exactly what I do now. So every minute for me counts. I know if I'm leaving here, I need to go here. I need to do this. So I've just literally just learned to manage my time and make sure that I fit in everything so that I also fill up my cup and I'm a happy mom to Solly. And I can also, you know, meet his needs as well. And also be a boss PR babe.
That she is. See, kids, it's not just me who makes lists and diary things like this. We've got a caller on the line. I'm going to ask you just to pop your headphones on so that you can hear clearly. And Tokoza on the line, I believe it's in Paul. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Are you?
I'm well, thanks. And yourself?
I'm good. No, I'm 23. I've got a brother who is 18 who's living with autism.
Yeah.
And, you know, my mother used to take care of us all equally and treat him like equal, because he didn't treat him like he was somehow different to us. And now I'm left with him. And one thing that I can tell you, my brother is very special. My brother can play chess like nobody's business. Mm-hmm. I'm so-called normal, but I can't play chess with him. I can't even compete. You know, yeah, even on next week on the 6th, he was supposed to be in Cape Town for a chess tournament, but because we lost our mother in Easter, so the finances and stuff, so I can't afford, because I'm only 23 and I'm the eldest. So I was supposed to pay for his trip and stuff to go to Cape Town, but he can't go. I know he's disappointed, but he's surprised me because he qualified, and then I can't even play with him, because playing with him is like, I know I'm going to lose. And he's been teaching me the tricks. So I know my brother is very special. Like, you know, with autism or not, you know, even now when I'm sitting with him, even if the thing is, now you have to check. Even sometimes when I'm out, I'll receive a call, go to therapy, you have to go to support groups and stuff. So he's giving me an opportunity to be strong as young as I am, you know. So I'm very glad to hear people like that who give these kids more support, because, you know, You know what he told me this morning? He said, hey, if mom was here, I was going to go to Cape Town. I was going to win the tournament. And I said, yeah, if we had the money, maybe we'll play lotto. Today's Tuesday. Yeah, he said, play Powerball today. If you win today the Powerball, then you can pay for me. Then I'll go. And I promise I'll win. I said, yeah, I'll play.
We'll keep our fingers crossed for you, Paul. I want to thank you for making that call. And I think that call, firstly, and good luck to you and your brother and Paul. It's a really, it's a huge responsibility to take on at such a young age. And he sounds like he's very, very lucky to have you in his life taking on that caretaking role for him. Thank you for that. Tokozo, I think, I mean, that call sort of sums up why we wanted to have this conversation on air today and why you wrote that piece that started this conversation, because it's about letting people like Mpho know you're not alone. Mm. You're not failing at this because you're feeling the pressure and you're struggling to juggle and balance all of these roles. And it's not easy. And it's okay to stick your hand up and say, I'm finding this pretty difficult. Not so.
Oh, Mpho's... I'm so emotional just hearing what Mpho has just said. I think people like you are really like special. We need more people like you, Mpho. And I think that's the exact reason why, as you said, Pippa, like, you are not alone. I think the best thing you can do for yourself is really just accept and find ways, because your normal is that normal. There's no other definition of normal. Your normal is your normal. And that's how I live my life in my house. I'm like, this is our normal. To me, you are normal. I know nothing else other than this. So I really appreciate hearing stories like that. And that's the main reason why I actually wanted to speak about this, because I wanted to also connect with other people who are going through these challenges. But I just want to say, like, there's beautiful sunshine that, you know, that are priceless, that you get from these experiences with special people.
Is there a way for listeners to access your article and read it in full for themselves and share it with others?
Of course.
Where do they find it, Ntokozo?
So you can find me on LinkedIn at Ntokozo Kalako, or you can find me at the Friday Street Club. That's our handle, The Friday Street Club. And my article is on the wall there on LinkedIn as well.
She is one of the PR boss babes from Friday Street Club. Tokozo, it's been such a pleasure to interact with you from this very different perspective than the normal, incredibly professional one that we're used to. And I have to say, from the outside, it looks like you're making it all so easy. It's clearly not. Mm. So a salute to you for what you're juggling, and a salute to you for having the courage to reach out to others and just start that conversation as you've done today. I bet there, for every Mpho who's phoned in, there are many others listening at home nodding and being grateful for knowing that they're not alone. So thank you for getting that conversation started.
My pleasure. Oh, thank you so much for having me. And thank you to your listeners.
Ntokozo Kalako. Please look for at the Friday Street Club, or look for her on LinkedIn to read her article for yourself in full.